A block of Chinese characters appear against a marbled background. Zhao Wei Films. Zhao Wei Films, in association with Infinite Frameworks, present. A film by Eric Koo. Be with me. On a Singapore street, a man in his 60s, wearing a white vest and knee-length shorts, leans against a counter in an open-fronted grocery shop. He touches the shoulder of a woman sitting on a chair near to him, and the two of them walk over to a couple of trestle tables outside. On top of the table sit some pallets filled with produce for sale. The man and the woman pick them up and begin to take them inside. Teresa Chan, Yizan Lee, Samantha Tan, Seat Keng Yu. The woman carries in the last of the pallets, and the man folds up the first table, propping it up against the wall outside. He then collapses the second table and leans it against the first one. Chu Sung Ching, Lawrence Yong, Lin Po. The man pulls two concertinaed security grills across the front of the shop, then takes a set of keys from out of his pocket and locks the grills from the inside. Director of Photography, Adrian Tan. Edited by Lo Hui Ling. Sound design by Kaz. Music by Kevin Matthews, Christine Sham. The man then pulls heavy metal shutters closed behind them, obliterating the view of the shop from the street. Produced by Brian Hong. Co-producers, Wong Kim Ho, Tan Fong Xiang. Associate producers, Adrian Tan, Michael Vong. The shop lights go out. Executive producers, James Toh, Jacqueline Koo, Freddie Yeo. Written by Eric Koo, Wong Kim Ho. Inspired by the life and autobiography of Teresa Chan. Directed by Eric Koo. A woman holds a piece of paper steady as she secures it firmly against the platen of a cream-coloured manual typewriter. She rotates the cylinder to line up the sheet, then slides the carriage to its starting position. Her fingers hover lightly over the keys for a moment. Then she begins to type.
Is true love truly there, my love?
The woman slides the carriage back to the beginning and starts a new line.
Yes, if your warm heart is.
The shopkeeper lies horizontal, his eyes closed as if asleep. His eyelids suddenly flicker, then open. The man's eyes search around for a couple of seconds, then he blinks and stares blankly into the distance. The shopkeeper, his face lined with age, sits on the edge of his neatly made single bed and stares sadly across at a second, which lies parallel to it. Placing his hands on his knees, he rises to his feet and shuffles out of the bedroom. He ambles along a dimly lit hallway into the kitchen, which has a window looking into the bedroom from which he came. He opens a refrigerator door. The man places a stainless steel kettle on a hob and switches on the gas. Later, he sits at the kitchen table dunking biscuits into a small cup of coffee and eating them. Later still, the man, wearing a white t-shirt over navy shorts, exits his front door, which leads onto a wide alleyway. In a bustling indoor market, the man searches around several food stalls. He picks up a couple of pieces of dried fish and looks closely at them. A selection of fresh ginger roots and exotic vegetables are displayed beside a large fish head. The man points at something sitting on a counter, and a lady in a striped top packs it up for him. At a meat counter, he selects a small rack of pork ribs, which are then chopped up on a wooden block with a large knife. At home, he peels potatoes. He puts ingredients into a wok that sits on top of a two-burner stove and stirs. The man flaps a newspaper under a smaller stove that sits on the floor. It heats a clay cooking pot. Using a cloth, he takes the lid off the pot and stirs the hearty pork and vegetable soup with a ladle. Later, a bearded portly guy in his late 30s called Fatty enters the shop. The shopkeeper places products into a plastic bag and hands it to Fatty, who counts out cash and pays. A clock on the wall reads 9 o'clock. Neatly stacked shelves are packed with tinned and boxed foodstuffs. Fatty leaves the shop and walks to his moped. He stashes the plastic bag in the moped's carry box, dons his red helmet, and slots the keys into the ignition. He realigns the handlebars and, pushing down with his right foot, tries to kickstart the moped. Delicate slim fingers type on a keyboard. A colourful monitor displays writing as Dumb Angel 67 and Teen Simp chat.
So, you want to have kids?
Not really.
Why?
Wouldn't want them to turn out like my mother. She's kind of different.
Wow. But I think different is cool.
The shopkeeper stacks pots filled with various foods on a tiered food carrier. Later, he stands on a street. A bus pulls up and opens its doors. The shopkeeper steps on board and the bus drives off. The shopkeeper sits on the bus, his food carrier wrapped neatly in a plastic bag sitting on his lap. He looks out of the window at the leafy vegetation outside. The shopkeeper walks to the entrance of a large building, Kwong Wai Shu Hospital and Nursing Home. Inside, he climbs flights of steps and trundles along a deserted corridor. He spoon-feeds a clear soup to the dark-haired lady who helped him close the shop. She's lying in a bed. She sips a spoonful and nods warmly to him. As he feeds her some more, she looks at him with a tender expression. The shopkeeper, his face imprinted with deep wrinkles, gently feeds her more of the soup. He sits alone with her in the stark, empty hospital ward. She sleeps with her head tilted to the side. The man rises and gathers his belongings together. He then taps the sleeping woman gently on the shoulder, grabs his bag, and leaves. The shopkeeper makes his way down the front steps of the hospital and walks slowly off into the dark night. Fatty sits at a table in a cheap restaurant, eating noodles with a spoon and chopsticks. He holds his face close to the bowl as he slurps the noodles into his mouth. He looks up irritatedly at a man sitting nearby with a family. stares back at him with a blank expression as a woman at his table passes an irritated child to another man. Fatty looks back down at his noodles and carries on eating. Later, he eats a large plate of food, steak, egg, chips and baked beans, with a knife, fork and spoon. He shovels in mouthful after mouthful and finishes up with a large glass of tiger beer. He closes his eyes as he guzzles down the remainder of the golden liquid. Looking uncomfortably satiated, he raises his hands and says,
"A lot de pois."
"One oyster omelette."
A pretty girl of around 15 with delicate slim fingers types into a keyboard.
"Do you believe in soulmates?"
Dumb Angel 67 answers.
"Ha ha, I do."
The girl, Teen Simp, waits nervously.
"Wanna exchange numbers? Mine is 900-18290.
Teen Simp smiles and types in her number. Fatty ambles down a street. White lights on buildings illuminate crates and bins of rubbish stacked on the footpath. As he enters an apartment, he briefly makes eye contact with an older man who walks off into a room. Fatty wipes his feet and goes to the kitchen. A calendar on the wall displays the 14th of February, 2004. He takes a can of stewed pork from a cupboard. He opens the can and places its contents into a hot pan over the hob. A text message appears on a mobile phone screen.
"It was nice to hear your voice."
Fatty, now bare-chested, sits at a table slurping up his stewed pork. He dips a Chinese dumpling into the meaty juices and eats. A different phone screen.
"I'm so excited to meet you tomorrow."
The man slurps up a huge chunk of fatty meat. The first phone screen.
"Me too."
Fatty lights a cigarette with a lighter and drags in deeply. He switches off the light in the kitchen and walks over the tiled floor. With his ample belly spilling out over the top of his boxer shorts, Fatty enters a room. After looking briefly at the man from earlier, lying fast asleep in bed, he grabs a mattress and drags it out of the room. He lays it on the tiled floor outside the door, switches off the light, and lies down. As if waking from a sleep, Fatty opens his eyes and a huge, broad smile creeps over his face. He's staring at a beautiful young woman. She looks back at him through striking dark eyes. She closes her eyes. On hearing noises, Fatty opens his eyes and raises his head. He scrunches up his plump face. A blue cloudy sky hangs over a cityscape filled with tall, slender skyscrapers. Fatty sits at a control desk in front of a bank of surveillance monitors. He smiles to himself as he watches the woman from his dream walking through a lobby. He manipulates a small lever which allows him to watch her as she ascends an escalator. Wearing a smart business suit, she gently tucks her hair back behind her ear. Fatty presses a button and watches her in a lift, then watches her walk out of the lift and strut across an empty lobby. He grins broadly. The pretty teenage girl types a message into her phone.
"I'm here. Are you late again?"
A reply.
"I'm on my way. Give me 5.
A man in a yellow t-shirt walks out of a shop as a pretty girl of about 15 with long dark brown hair tied up in a ponytail walks past. In another part of the city, a man sits at a computer. He types, "Madam Lee Siu Moi." The dark-haired, handsome, 40-something man continues his report.
"Status, widowed. Number of dependents, 2 children."
He walks down a corridor and knocks on a door. The door opens and he steps in to meet a middle-aged woman and her children. He continues to type.
Husband Cheng Kun was hanged 6 months ago for drug trafficking in marijuana.
A woman shows him into a room where he sits on a chair beside a table. A young boy joins him.
Unemployed, no savings, no help. Family more than $20,000 in debt. Owes HDB, rent, children's school fees not paid.
Fatty sits at a large window in a grand office, looking out over the impressive cityscape. Steps on an escalator rise up from the floor and ascend. Fatty, wearing a blue security guard's uniform, hides in a nook in a wall. He furtively sneaks little peeps out to the large, open-plan, marble-floored lobby. The smart business lady from his dream on the monitor screens appears and walks through an entranceway. He follows her nervously and watches as she waits for the lift. She checks her watch and rummages through her handbag. She takes out a piece of paper as the lift arrives. A text message.
What for?
Fatty looks at some architectural artwork hanging on the office walls. Another message.
For talking and listening to me.
But I enjoy talking to you.
Fatty walks around an empty office. On a mobile phone screen.
Promise me you will always talk to me?
A gold shield appears on a cinema screen with the letters SB in the centre.
What a beautiful sunset.
Certainly. Can't seem to recall when was the last time I felt this peaceful.
You can say that for sure. We have come so far.
Without you, I would never be where I am now.
In the cinema, a girl's leg rubs up against another leg. A delicate hand reaches over and caresses the girl's hand.
Where is fate leading us? Where is fate leading us?
We will go wherever it takes us.
We'll be together till the end, right?
The pretty long-haired girl glances down at the clasped hands. She tentatively leans over and nestles her head on her companion's shoulder and closes her eyes. Her companion is Teen Simp, who looks down at her friend, then continues to watch the screen with a satisfied smile. Later, the two teenage girls are browsing in a clothes shop. They giggle at a leather corset on a display model and walk arm in arm past a graffitied wall, laughing and joking. In a music store, Dumb Angel 67, whose real name is Sam, listens to records through headphones. She lets Teen Simp, real name Jackie, have a listen. They do each other's makeup, painting on black eyeliner and blusher. They enter a photo booth and pose for shots, sticking out their tongues and blowing kisses. On the photo booth's computer screen, they paste hearts and stars and other cute designs onto their photograph. Finally, using a special pen, they write, "I heart you" in pink letters. The girls smile and put on more makeup. In a store, they look at a cuddly toy dog with big, floppy ears. Jackie buys it for Sam, who returns the gesture with a kiss on the cheek. In an ice cream parlour, the girls in their school uniforms eat small tubs of ice cream and play with a cuddly toy dog. The man writing the report on the broken family walks through a supermarket with a deaf-blind elderly lady on his arm. He guides her hand towards some shellfish.
How much are you?
How much is this?
He writes the amount on the palm of her hand.
You tell them it's too expensive.
They walk on past the meat and dairy counter. At the plush office building, the smart businesswoman steps into a lift and smiles. She presses the button and the doors close. She slings her handbag over her shoulder and stands facing the doors. Behind her, Fatty shifts nervously from foot to foot and rubs his face. She holds a hand to her nose. Later, Fatty's boss finds him asleep at his desk.
You sleep again. You don't come back tomorrow. You're fired.
That night, Fatty lies on his mattress at home. He rubs his forehead sleepily. Fatty, who's wearing nothing but a pair of black boxer shorts, turns onto his side. The bedroom door opens and a skinny man walks out. He rubs his nose and kicks the mattress a couple of times.
Damn crying day and night.
Fatty watches as he walks off. In a nightclub, Sam, wearing a patterned micro miniskirt and a boob tube, dances on a platform. Jackie, surrounded by a group of young men, dances on the floor and looks up at her pretty friend. She stops dancing and her smile fades, a thoughtful and adoring look appearing on her face. Jackie smiles and shakes her head. The girl's eyes meet and Sam beams warmly at her friend. Jackie gazes back lovingly. Night, the girls stagger around a deserted plaza outside Borders Bookshop and Cafe. With arms around each other, they throw their legs in the air and kick off their shoes. They dance around a spherical sculpture and lie down on some stone steps nearby, with their arms draped around each other. Like two peas in a pod, the girls look up at the sky, pointing at stars and chatting. They tenderly pull each other close. Each other in bed. Jackie caresses Sam's face and they rub noses. At an apartment complex, Fatty sits in a security hut eating a meal off his lap. Later, still in his blue uniform, Fatty holds his head down as he slowly trundles along an arched walkway. Later still, now wearing his own clothes, he stands on the central verge of a busy dual carriageway. Fatty stands totally still, blinking sometimes as he stares upwards at his dream girl's apartment. The long brown-haired beauty walks through the spacious white living room, which has a selection of tall, narrow paintings on one wall. She's reading a piece of paper. The apartment has tall, wide windows overlooking the busy road. Later, Fatty walks along a street. He enters a stationery shop and checks out different styles of notepaper. He picks up a sheet of heavy weighted paper and rubs it with his hand. He takes several sheets of the paper to the till. at home, Fatty sits bare-chested at the kitchen table, a black pen in his right hand. A packet of cigarettes, a lighter, and a blank piece of notepaper, which is decorated with a faint rose pattern, lie on the table in front of him. Fatty closes his eyes and looks thoughtful for a moment, then begins to write.
Dear Miss Anne.
The man stops writing and frowns. He scratches his head. His lips move as he searches for the words, and he rests his chin in his hand. The man hides the paper under the table as the skinny man walks in.
Hey, toss me lad.
What are you doing, Fatty?
Fatty looks sheepish. Morning. Sam is woken up by a small pink alarm clock that sits next to a Miffy the Rabbit lamp and a fluffy photo frame on a desk beside her bed. She sleepily reaches over and turns it off, then closes her eyes again. Sam grabs her mobile phone off her desk and sees that she has a text message from Jackie.
Good morning, dear.
Now in her school uniform, Sam sits with her parents and brother at the breakfast table. She takes a sip of water, then reaches down into her bag and takes out her phone as her bespectacled father looks at her with a frown from over the top of his newspaper. Sam smiles as she reads her text message, then quickly sends a reply, before putting her phone away and carrying on with her breakfast. Later, she closes a set of gates behind her as she leaves for school. Sam quickly reaches into her rucksack and pulls out her phone. She checks the message, then looks around. A smile breaks across her face and she waves as she clocks a boy of about 16 standing next to a tree nearby. He waves back with a grin and they wander off up the street together. The deaf-blind lady walks into a classroom where a group of children are sitting around a table.
Hello!
Hello.
The woman carefully makes her way towards the table and rests a hand on top of it.
I am your new teacher. My name is Ms. Chan.
She holds the face of a girl of about 8.
What is your name?
My name is Suja.
You look very cute.
Yeah. The young boy she's talking to grins.
Thank you.
Night. Fatty exits a lift in his tall apartment building and slowly makes his way across a beige tiled floor. He walks across a balcony and comes to a stop outside his flat. He gestures to a little boy who's about to walk into the next apartment. The boy walks over to Fatty, who takes a packet out of his shirt pocket.
Sweet.
Thank you, Uncle.
The boy takes a sweet. Fatty watches as he walks back over to his apartment and goes inside. Fatty's brother and father are sitting in their grotty kitchen, several beer cans on the table in front of them. They turn around as Fatty walks in and watch as he ambles slowly towards them. His father throws a beer can at him as he walks past them without acknowledgement.
Oi! Make one beer, lad!
Give me a can of beer.
Fatty takes a can out of the fridge and puts it down on the table.
What on earth?
Where's mine?
Fatty takes out another can and hands it to his brother. His father looks at his brother.
Beat him up all the time when he was young and still turned out useless. Why isn't he like you?
Later, Fatty sits alone in his favourite cheap restaurant, empty dishes on the table in front of him. He takes a long drag on his cigarette, then sadly rests his head in his hand. stands outside his dream woman Anne's apartment and stares up at her, watching rapt as she talks on the phone. Later, Anne, dressed in a black, sleeveless, high-necked mini-dress, her long brown hair flowing loosely over her shoulders, sits at a table in the elegant, glass-fronted Cock and Bull restaurant. She chats happily with her companion, a good-looking guy in his late 30s. Leaning against his moped outside, Fatty gazes in at her unblinkingly. An unhappy-looking Sam lies on her side on Jackie's bed. Jackie lies behind her, gently stroking Sam's arm. She begins to move in closer, but Sam brushes her off. Jackie's mum, holding a brown Pomeranian, knocks on the door. Sam gets up. As Jackie's mum walks away, Sam pokes her head around the bedroom door. She checks that the coast is clear, then leaves. Alone in her room, Jackie spies Sam's bag sitting on the floor at the foot of the bed. She looks at it for a few moments, then quickly undoes the zip. Jackie searches through the brown, bowling-style bag and pulls out Sam's mobile phone. Seeing that Sam has a new text message, she opens it. She looks stunned as she sees it's the latest of several from someone called Brian.
See you at the gelato at 3:30 p.m. tomorrow.
Jackie looks away from the phone, pained. Cooked chickens and pieces of a darker meat hang from a rack in a restaurant kitchen. Chopped spring onions join an irregular-shaped omelette in a sizzling pan. Fatty sits at a table in the cafeteria-like restaurant and hungrily eats a plate of food with chopsticks. A woman wanders over to him.
Mister, please buy some tissue. $1 for 3 packets.
Fatty reaches into his shirt pocket and pulls out a banknote. He gives it to the woman, who gratefully hands him the tissues, which he doesn't take.
Thank you.
Jackie looks at a message on her phone.
Where are you?
She stands outside the ice cream parlour, staring in sadly, her lip trembling. Jackie looks back down at her phone. She scrolls through the address book, then sends her text message to Sam. Inside the gelato, Sam and Brian share a laugh. Sam picks up her phone, her face falling as she reads Jackie's message. Brian watches her as she composes a reply.
At the movies. Can't talk now. Call you later.
Sam hits send, then replaces her phone on the table and smiles flirtatiously at good-looking Brian. Outside, Jackie continues to stare in at the couple, her pretty young face full of anguish. Several potted trees, their foliage pruned into globes and decorated with white fairy lights, line a walkway in an elegant shopping arcade. Behind one of the trees stands Fatty, its thin trunk failing to hide his bulky frame. He peers out from behind it, then nervously wrings his hands together. He watches as Anne walks into a smart clothes boutique. Wearing a knee-length denim skirt with slits up the back and front and a patterned long-sleeve top, she looks around at the chic designs on display. Anne takes a jacket off a clothes rail and holds it up in front of her, before putting it back again and wandering off to another part of the shop. Fatty watches with a smile as she takes a strappy pink dress off a rail and holds it up admiringly. Oblivious to Fatty, who's standing a few feet from the shop window staring in at her, Anne puts the dress back on the rail again. Fatty suddenly notices a security guard walking towards him. He turns and lopes away. Sam is sitting in front of her computer in her bedroom. She looks at her phone and reads the message.
I want to see you.
Sam sighs and looks uncomfortable. She quickly composes a reply.
Can't meet. I've to study for a test.
She sends the text message. Jackie's walking along a street. Jackie looks at her phone and reads the message. She types in a response. Sam bites her lip as she reads Jackie's latest message.
Don't you miss me?
Sam looks down miserably. Her gaze falls onto the sheet of photos of herself and Jackie that they took in happier times. She focuses on one of the photos, in which the girls stand close together and blow kisses at the camera. She stares at it guiltily. The rain teems down outside Fatty's security office. He sits inside looking thoughtful, scratching his head with his pen. He leans forward in his seat and starts to compose a letter on another sheet of the rose pattern paper. Fatty blinks and shakes his head. With a pained grimace, Fatty tears up the sheet of paper and throws it out of the door onto the wet ground outside. Carrying a couple of white plastic carrier bags, the old shopkeeper makes his way along the alleyway towards his house. Inside, he scrapes plates of leftover food into a bin. Later, he concentrates as he moves the beads on an abacus. Later still, he sits on a stool in his shop, staring down despondently, his shoulders slumped. Miss Chan, Teresa, sits on her sofa, a serene expression on her face. Jackie walks to a secluded phone box. She picks up the receiver and begins to dial.
Why have you been avoiding me?
Jackie stares blankly into the distance, then begins to dial again.
StarHub is unable to get a response from our customer's mobile phone. Please try again later.
Sam lies on her stomach on a bed, propping herself up with her elbows. Looking somber, she puts her phone to one side. She doesn't look round as Brian places a hand on her back and then begins to plant delicate kisses on her shoulder. Sam rolls over and closes her eyes as Brian kisses her neck tenderly. In the phone box, Jackie hangs up. Jackie sits in front of her computer composing an email.
Have I said something I shouldn't have said? Done something I shouldn't have done? If so, at least let me know so that I can try to climb out of this pit of misery. Sam, I just want an explanation. Is that too much to ask after all that we've been through? Can't you at least find it in your heart to spare me the pain? If you want to punish me, you've more than succeeded. It's 4 in the morning now. I want to sleep, but I can't. This has not been an easy email for me to write, but I just have to know. Please.
Later, Jackie lies wide awake on top of her bed. She sits up and glares as her mother walks in.
滚开啊!
Get lost!
Her mother shuffles out again. Jackie gets up and slams the door shut behind her. Jackie throws Sam's toy dog at a cupboard door. Day. Sam, wearing a pair of tiny shorts and a tight-fitting vest top, sits on the end of her bed, drinking a dark-coloured liquid from a bottle. She looks at her phone and reads a text message from Jackie.
Why are you torturing me?
Peeved, Sam deletes the message, then proceeds to delete several more messages from Jackie that are sitting in her inbox. Fatty sitting at his kitchen table, a piece of the rose-patterned paper in front of him. He takes a drag on a cigarette and looks down at a small book that he's holding in his hand. He rests the cigarette in an ashtray, and picks up his pen. Jackie, wearing a dark pink t-shirt with a white motif on it and black trousers, stands on a street, staring across at Sam's house. Her phone in her hand, she begins to compose a text message.
Why are you doing this to me?
Jackie sends the message to Sam. Sam is lying on her bed. She picks her phone up from off her desk and reads the message. Outside, Jackie slowly starts to walk towards the house, looking left and right for any approaching traffic as she crosses the road. Sam stares at her phone with a tired expression. She sighs and rolls onto her side, staring unhappily into the distance. Outside, Jackie stares through the gates, lost in her own thoughts. She reaches up to the doorbell and presses its red button. Sam looks towards her open bedroom window. She gets up off her bed and walks towards it, staring through the octagonal-shaped window grille onto the street below. She sees Jackie standing lost by the gate, then moves away from the window as her father walks down the path towards her former friend.
Can I help you?
Jackie stares up at him. He looks at her with concern.
Are you okay?
Jackie turns and runs away down the sunny, tree-lined street. Later, she sits in a Pizza Hut and stares down at a photo of herself and Sam that lies on the table before her. Jackie stands by the side of a road in a busy part of the city and stares gravely at a pelican crossing opposite. The green man flashes and is replaced by his red counterpart. Jackie closes her eyes, takes a deep breath, and steps out into the road. The traffic just passes her by. Words are typed onto a sheet of paper.
Sadly, sometimes even true love can be broken, oh dear.
The typewriter's black ink ribbon jumps up and down as the lettered type bars strike the page. The carriage is pushed back to the beginning and a new line is started.
Yet, it does not mean the world is ending.
At the grocery store, the grilled security shutters are closed. Inside the shop, beer bottles and cans are lined up in a uniformed fashion on rows of shelves. Large jars of neatly arranged biscuits stand side by side on another shelf. In the shopkeeper's bedroom, the beds have been neatly made up. A vintage hoop chair sits at the foot of one of them. An old brown suitcase and a couple of boxes lie on a slatted shelf. Saucepans rest on a draining board in the kitchen. The tiered food carrier sits with other pots on a table. The shopkeeper stands by his kitchen table, on top of which sit several bowls of varying sizes, all containing food. He spoons white sticky rice into a small bowl. The dark-haired lady he was visiting in the hospital sits near to him and watches as he sits down and starts to add meat and vegetables to the rice. He puts the bowl down in front of her. The man picks up his own bowl and begins to help himself to the food. He looks across at the woman, then, using chopsticks, begins to eat his meal. She doesn't eat. More words are typed onto paper.
Love does not die, although bodies may perish from all sorts of hurt.
Teresa sits at a desk in a basically furnished room. Venetian blinds cover the square window, and a large fan sits on the desk in front of her. Teresa slides the carriage of the typewriter to the right and begins a new line.
Love disappears only when you do not understand what it means. I was born on July 9th, 1943 on Sago Lane. I was a cute and happy baby, but had my parents known what was in store for me, they probably would have given me away for adoption.
The handsome man who is with Teresa in the supermarket walks towards the shopkeeper's front door. The shopkeeper sits, lost in his own world.
Dad lost a thriving restaurant business. I had to learn how to cook, wash and clean by the time I was 10.
The handsome man gets out his mobile phone and dials a number. The shopkeeper sits unmoving. The handsome man walks slowly past the front of the closed-up shop.
My parents were happy and proud of me, but their happiness and pride did not last long. There was little knowledge as to what really happened to cause my deafness.
Teresa sits on a leather chair and checks the time using a braille watch. She stands up and walks away. She opens her door to the handsome man and hugs him warmly. Later, they're at a meat counter in a supermarket.
How much is it, is it?
How much is this?
The handsome man draws on the palm of her hand to tell her the price of the package of meat he's holding.
This one can.
Later, Teresa places the meat with three other packages on a shelf in her refrigerator. The handsome man sits on her sofa. Teresa walks towards him. The man takes her hand to guide her, and she sits down. The man smiles warmly at her as Teresa rests her hands on top of his and turns her head in his direction.
How is your father?
How is your father?
The man takes her hand and signs his reply on it.
He is fine.
Do you go to see him?
Do you go to see him?
Again, the man signs his reply, tapping on Teresa's palm and fingers.
Yes, sometimes.
You should see him more often.
You should see him more often.
At the grocery store, a young man bangs on the closed security grill.
Old man! Old man, one pack of Marlboro. Why are the business behind closed grills? It's so inconvenient, you should open them.
The shopkeeper gives the man the cigarettes and takes his money.
At 14, I went deaf. Why, I don't know. One night, blood and pus trickled down my cheek. Both my mother and father didn't think much of it. My mother thought it was only a small boil which had burst open. The next morning, my hearing went. Mom was shocked. She shouted into my ears, but I couldn't make out what she was saying.
Teresa, wearing a pair of white pajamas, is curled up in bed. She rolls over, swings her legs over the side of it, and sits up. She scratches her head, then stands up and pads slowly out of the room. In her kitchen, she uses a spoon to smear a mustard-coloured spread over a slice of thick white bread. She carefully folds the bread in two and takes a bite. Later, Teresa sits at her desk and reads through a braille copy of the New York Times. Teresa runs her fingers over the sheets of raised dots.
How much pain and suffering can a person take? I wrestled with that question many times. I've lost my hearing and now I'm about to lose my sight as well.
Teresa takes a bunch of pak choi over to her sink.
It all started with the right eye.
I saw changing colours and black dots and I kept blinking. My parents did not take me immediately to the hospital for treatment. They just gave me eye drops and Chinese herbs.
Teresa puts the pak choi into a metallic bowl, then takes a chopping board and a knife out of the sink. She turns on the tap and places her hands under the water, then takes a piece of soap and begins to wash them.
They only sought help when I was no longer able to see with my right eye, and when my left one started to give me trouble.
Teresa takes the pak choi out of the bowl, then puts the bowl under the tap. She takes hold of the knife and begins to prepare the vegetable.
I remember long stays in the hospital and daily vision tests, painful injections and bandages on my eyes. My hands were tied at night because they did not want me to touch my bandages.
Teresa cuts the ends off the pale green pak choi stalks, then places them on the chopping board and chops their dark green leaves off. Later, she stands in front of a gas cooker. A frying pan sits on top of one of its burners. Teresa takes a large metal spoon with a plastic handle and holds it against the bottom of the pan for a few moments. She then uses the spoon to crack open an egg. She gently checks the position of the egg in the pan and then cracks open a second.
Every morning when the doctors came to check on me, I'd ask them if I would ever see again. One patted my hand without replying my question. I just kept praying. Oh, I do not want to be blind, and I do not deserve this eternal punishment. I became blind.
Short grey-haired Teresa, who's wearing a white vest top and grey jogging bottoms, has a look of extreme concentration on her face as she uses the spoon to check that the eggs are cooking properly. After tapping the whites of the eggs with the side of the spoon a few times, Teresa then turns down the heat.
I felt I was living in a very silent and dark prison. There were days when I didn't want to live, but there were good days when I would tell myself that it did not matter as long as I was alive and well guarded by heaven's love.
Teresa adds the leaves of the pak choi to the pan and begins to stir them gently. She then reaches into the metal bowl that is sitting by the side of the cooker and takes out a handful of the stalks. She adds those to the pan, then delicately stirs again. With the pak choi sizzling away in the pan, Teresa walks over to a shelf unit and takes something out of a storage jar. She then walks back over to the cooker and sprinkles the new ingredient into the pan.
I doubt if most people can understand what it's like to be deaf and blind. It's as if someone had built a wall between me and the living, a wall which nobody can tear or break down.
Later, Teresa sits at her table eating her meal. She uses a fork to push the food onto a spoon, then effortlessly lifts the spoon towards her mouth.
I could not discern beautiful sights or sounds, but I never saw or heard anything ugly either.
Teresa stands at her sink and scrubs the frying pan clean. Now, wearing a pink and white swimming costume, Teresa climbs carefully down steps into an outdoor swimming pool. An old lady with her white hair tied back in a low bun sits by the side and watches her.
God works in mysterious ways. Sometimes people appear and just change the course of your life. Mrs. Elizabeth Choi came into my life, and it suddenly veered into the most wondrous of dimensions.
Elizabeth smiles as Teresa swims about in the pale blue water.
Beth, now 95, is a remarkable person. She suffered during World War II, but she never lost her sense of self-respect, her dignity and her love for humanity. She is my personal heroine of peace.
It was because of her that I went to school. At that time, Beth was the principal of the school for the blind. Alerted by a social worker, Beth came to my home in 1957 and won me over. Somehow, in my heart, I knew she was kind and could be trusted.
The spire of an ornately decorated church reaches into a cloudy grey sky. Inside, a short, dark-haired woman leads Teresa, a black lace veil covering her hair, over to a stone stoop. Teresa gently places a finger into the holy water, then makes the sign of the cross on her forehead. The woman leads Teresa slowly down the aisle. Teresa genuflects and bows her head towards the altar, before moving into a pew and kneeling in prayer. Elizabeth is at prayer in the pew behind her.
She enrolled me into the school for the blind. It never crossed my mind that I could attend school after becoming deaf and blind. I soon met Reuben Jacob, who became my beloved teacher.
A sign over the entrance to a building reads, Singapore School for the Visually Handicapped. Teresa, wearing a white scoop-neck t-shirt and black capri pants, walks slowly down a covered walkway. She holds her white stick in her left hand, and feels her way along glossy walls painted duck egg blue with her right.
Nobody expected much from Mr. Jacob as far as educating me was concerned. After all, I had a double handicap and spoke Cantonese and no English. He was blind, Jewish, and spoke no Chinese. But my teacher was a smart and patient man. He devised his own methods of teaching someone who was not only blind but deaf too.
Teresa comes to the open doorway of a classroom and walks inside. She sits with a young boy of about 10, her hands either side of his face.
Would you like me to
teach? Would you like me to teach you weaving?
Weaving?
Yes.
She demonstrates.
Okay.
Okay,
please do it for me.
The boy takes a strip of paper.
Up and down, up and down, up and down. Okay, please do.
Teresa takes the boy's hand and weaves one of her fingers through his to describe the weaving process. The boy then takes his strip of yellow paper and attempts to weave it through the slits cut vertically at 1 centimeter spaces into a piece of thin black cord.
The paper, yes, like...
The paper is like your finger.
The needle.
Later, Teresa knits. Now she holds a piece of paper in front of another boy.
You must
be careful.
Be careful.
Do not bend it, okay?
Teresa holds her hand over a ball of pink plasticine. The young boy's hands rest over the top of hers as she begins to gently manipulate the plasticine into a smoother sphere.
In early 1957, Sir John Wilson, the blind director of the Royal Commonwealth Society for the Blind in London, toured Southeast Asia.
Teresa places her other hand over the boy's. They lift the ball up and slam it back down onto the table. Teresa then squashes the plasticine into a patty with the palm of her hand.
The visit was to mark another milestone in my life. When he visited the school, Beth told me to tell him in Cantonese, "Please help me and remember me. I want to go to school." Mr. Wilson did. He visited the famous Perkins School in Massachusetts and told the director, Dr. Edward Waterhouse, about a deaf and blind girl in Singapore. If you see her, you will like her.
Teresa takes the boy's thumb and presses it down hard into the center of the plasticine patty.
Well, Dr. Waterhouse turned up in Singapore in 1958. Yes, he liked me. In fact, he liked me so much he offered me a scholarship to go to Perkins, where they had the best teachers and facilities to educate someone like me.
Teresa interlocks the boy's fingers between hers and helps him mould the ball of plasticine into a little bowl.
And so I found myself in America at the end of 1960. I could not speak English at that time, and one of the most pressing things was teaching me speech. It is probably baffling to a lot of people how someone like me, who is both blind and deaf, can learn a totally new and different tongue. I guess it's true what they say, if there's a will, there's a way.
The handsome man who was writing the report earlier is now flicking through the pages of a manuscript. He reads chapter 5 entitled, My Darkened World and My Heroine.
Determination can conquer the most difficult and discouraging things in the world.
The man types into a laptop computer. A series of Chinese characters appear on the screen. The man finishes his sentence. It reads, Eternal Punishment. The shopkeeper lies on his side in bed, staring blankly through sad eyes. He slowly turns onto his back, light from the window hitting his neck. The bound manuscript sits on the handsome man's desk. The title is printed on the cover page. The story of Precious Lotus, Teresa. The man picks it up. The man rattles the shop's security grills.
Pa!
The despondent shopkeeper shuffles through the shop and stares at his son through the grills.
Pa!
Pa, how are you?
Later, the shopkeeper eats at the kitchen table with his son. The lady from the hospital just sits there. The son takes some green pak choy from a dish and adds it to a bowl of rice in his hand. He gobbles up the food with chopsticks.
Pa, your food is so good.
Pa, your food is the best.
He looks at his father with a concerned affection.
Pa.
Pa.
Eat.
His father continues to eat, not looking at his son.
Ma's dead. You have to take care of yourself.
The shopkeeper snaps his son's comments and gets up from the table. The woman continues to sit still. The shopkeeper scrapes leftover food from bowls into a plastic container. Later in the shop.
I'm translating a book for this lady, Teresa. She's deaf and blind. This is her life story. You should read it.
He hands his father the manuscript. The shopkeeper takes it unwillingly.
He
lays a hand on his father's shoulder.
I have to go and see Teresa now. I'll come back next Sunday for dinner.
The shopkeeper nods and takes out keys to open the shop's front grills. Teresa, wearing a floral printed t-shirt, walks slowly to her front door and opens it. The shopkeeper's son reaches out to her through the grills on her security gate. She takes his hand. Inside Teresa's apartment, the shopkeeper's son communicates with her through hand-to-hand tactile signing, spelling out the words with a series of tapping and rubbing motions on the palm of her hand.
My father cooked this. I thought you might like it. Braised pork.
Teresa raises the plastic container of food to her nose.
Smells delicious.
A cloudy grey sky. A bare tree sways in a breeze. A single leaf floats down towards the ground. The shopkeeper is asleep in his shop. A female hand reaches forward and knocks Teresa's manuscript off a table and onto the floor. The shopkeeper wakes and goes over to pick it up. He glances at the front cover, now creased from the fall. Later, the shopkeeper sits on a low chair in his hallway, and reads the manuscript.
I was blessed and lucky enough to have travelled the world.
Teresa washes clothes in a bucket in a sink.
It was in Bombay that I encountered my first sorrowful experience.
Shots of the shopkeeper reading in his bedroom are intercut with Teresa cleaning in her apartment.
One night, God wanted me to know his world. My travelling companion Peggy and I were standing on the balcony of the hotel.
Teresa pats down and dusts two leather chairs in her dimly lit living room.
On the dirty pavements were hordes of homeless families sleeping.
The shopkeeper stirs ingredients in a pot on his cooker and continues to read, now seemingly not able to put the book down.
Peggy said they looked hungry and lifeless. It struck me that while I was disabled, I had everything.
Teresa sweeps up the tiled floor of her immaculately tidy apartment.
These people were just struggling so that they could survive. I quietly made a vow that one day I would donate something to these poor people of India. In 1975, I appealed to the public for help and received some money, with which I bought two Perkins Braille writers, two Braille watches, and included a small sum of money. I arranged for these to be sent to India.
Teresa sweeps around the legs of her modest dining table and chairs.
I did a lot of growing up in America. I had an education. I did things I never thought I could do. I even dated.
The shopkeeper turns a page as he continues to read at his kitchen table. His frozen expression remains the same, except for the occasional slight raising of his eyebrows.
Pa.
The shopkeeper glances up at his son.
Pa, Teresa loves your cooking.
Chili and ginger are sliced and chopped on a wooden board. The shopkeeper mashes up a paste in a mortar and pestle. He spoons the brownish paste into a hot wok on the cooker and stirs it into a red sauce. He mixes it with a metal spatula till it merges to a thick consistency. He adds in chunks of raw meat and carefully folds the sauce over them. As it cooks, the sauce changes from a pale muddy colour to a bubbling, deep, rich brown. His son delivers it to Teresa.
I love curry.
She lifts a large spoonful of the dish to her lips.
It tastes good.
The shopkeeper's son pats her gently on the back and smiles warmly. Later, he communicates to her through tactile hand signing.
Anything special you would like my father to cook?
At the market, the shopkeeper looks at a host of sea bream on the counter. At home, he washes one of the oval-shaped silver fish under running water and places it carefully on a board. He fries the fish whole in oil in a wok. He turns it over with a spatula, revealing a cooked, crispy side. Later, he spoons a brown sauce over it. At the shop, a wall clock reads 23 minutes past 7. The shopkeeper hands his son the tiered food carrier. At Teresa's apartment, the shopkeeper's son and Teresa tactile hand sign.
My father is very inspired by your book.
Teresa and the shopkeeper's son sit at the dining table. He watches as she eats a spoonful of the fish.
This tastes very nice. Your father is a good cook.
He places his hand on her shoulder and smiles warmly at the older lady as she sucks the meaty flesh off a bone. Later, he tactile hand signs on the palm of her left hand. She wears two gold rings on her middle and ring fingers.
Father is very happy cooking for you. He really enjoys your feedback.
The shopkeeper chops vegetables on a wooden board with a large cleaver. He fries the vegetables with meat in a wok and stirs them around. More dishes are poured into the tiers of the food carrier. Teresa eats the prepared dishes.
I have three regular visits a week from kind folks who come to help me with my weekly grocery shopping, to take me out or to keep me company.
The shopkeeper's son watches Teresa enjoying the food with a smile. Later, he tactile hand signs.
My father is getting better.
A hearty broth is stirred in a pot, and more dishes are laid out for Teresa. Fatty sits at his kitchen table, reading the words on a piece of the pretty rose design notepaper. He's finally finished his love letter. He neatly folds the A4 size notepaper in half. Fatty heads for his front door. He opens the ornate security grille and closes the white painted wooden door behind him. Fatty walks along the balcony, then enters a lift.
Going down.
He stands facing the doors as they close. He's got his back to a man who's standing with a young boy. Fatty becomes irritated as the man begins slapping the boy on the back of the head. Fatty turns to the man with an angry grimace. Fatty punches the man in the gut several times. The man, boy and Fatty appear from the lift as the doors slide open. It appears that nothing has happened. The shopkeeper slides open the concertina security grills on the front of his shop. He carries out a trestle table and sets it up.
We all have our dreams. I'm no different. I dreamed of being a Chinese opera singer at age 3, but fate robbed me of this dream.
The shopkeeper neatly lays pallets of food products on the table.
Are there dreams that do not die? God alone knows, and I trust him.
The shopkeeper sits on a stool in his shop, watching the traffic drive past. Fatty walks past and stops. He looks at the shopkeeper, waves the handwritten note above his head, and grins. Grey clouds scud over mobile phone masts on top of a derelict building. Jackie walks slowly through the dreary grey industrial site. Concrete blocks support heavy metal structures. Pipes and cables run around the blackened walls. Jackie watches a memory of herself and Sam strolling along hand in hand. Sam nestles her head on Jackie's shoulder. She watches as the happy pair, both wearing their school uniforms, crouch down and step under a large pipe. The two pretty girls giggle with one another. The real-life Jackie observes them sadly as they hoist themselves onto another large pipe. Jackie looks nervously across at Sam, then looks away again. Sam, a coy smile on her face, stares over at Jackie. The girls continue to exchange awkward glances. Jackie watches herself lean tentatively forward towards her friend. Sam also begins to move in closer, and the two girls stare longingly at each other. Jackie tenderly places a hand on the side of Sam's face and kisses her gently on the lips. Sam responds, and as Jackie puts her arm around her friend, the kiss becomes more passionate. Jackie watches sorrowfully. She begins to slowly climb a metal ladder fixed to one of the factory walls. She steps onto the roof of the high building amongst the phone masts and stares out into the distance. Fatty walks along a footpath, pausing briefly to look at his note. He smiles to himself. Jackie stands on the roof under the grey, cloudy sky. A couple of cranes stand tall in the distance. She takes out her mobile phone and begins to compose a text message. Then she holds out the phone and drops it. It smashes on the ground in front of Fatty. He stops to have a look. On the roof, Jackie is no longer to be seen. She lies unconscious, sprawled over Fatty's ample abdomen. He lies on his back on the ground, a pool of deep red blood seeping from his head over the concrete. He turns to see the note blow away in a gust of wind. He closes his eyes, and his head falls to the side. Sam walks along a residential street. She looks at a text message received on her mobile phone.
All I want is to just talk to you again. I love you.
Sam scrolls down through the options button and moves the cursor from delete to reply. She moves the cursor back to delete and presses the execute button. Sam looks up, her pretty face full of guilt. Teresa sits at her desk at home. She carefully cuts a length of green wrapping paper with a pair of scissors.
I nearly got married in 1968, but I lost him to nose cancer on Christmas Day in 1968. Till today, at 5 to 5 every Christmas morning, my tears flow freely.
Teresa places a thin, rectangular black box on the cutout paper and begins to wrap it.
Today, I am still single, but still very much in love with him. I dreamed of love and family, but God took my only love, and all my sweet dreams died.
Teresa reaches into a box and takes out a roll of sellotape. Fatty's dream girl, Anne, sits alone at a table at a posh restaurant. She reads an article in a newspaper. Girl jumps, but kills man instead. There's a picture of Fatty, otherwise known as Mr. Kok Keng Chun. She stares at the article in shock. A meaty vegetable broth bubbles in a ceramic pot. The shopkeeper stirs it with a ladle. Later, he packs the tiered food carrier. In the shop, he spot cleans the countertop with a cloth. The dark-haired woman, his dead wife, stands in front of him watching as he dabs the cloth into a jar of cleaning product and rubs at the countertop. With a contented expression, she turns and walks away towards the street. She stops in the doorway and turns back to him. He continues to rub with his back stooped and head down. As if sensing something, the shopkeeper raises his head and looks at the doorway, but there's nobody there. His wife stands watching him, and with a half smile, nods her head slightly as if wanting to say something. The shopkeeper continues to look out at the empty shop. His son is on his mobile phone.
Pa,
I need your help. I have to attend a suicide case now. I need you to visit Teresa. She's expecting me at 8.
The shopkeeper listens attentively.
Can you please go first, because I can't make it on time. I don't want her to worry.
The shopkeeper sits on a bus as it travels through the bustling streets of Singapore. His food carrier, wrapped in a plastic bag, sits on his lap. He looks out at the Christmas lights adorning shops and restaurants. Teresa sits at home. She opens the glass front of her Braille watch and checks the time. The shopkeeper checks his watch too. It's 7:15 p.m. At the hospital, the shopkeeper's son enters a ward. He walks past an artificial Christmas tree decorated with colourful twinkling fairy lights. He approaches Jackie's bed. Jackie's mum sits anxiously twitching and staring at her daughter, who lies in bed, breathing through an oxygen mask. Jackie and the shopkeeper's son share a long, meaningful look. He smiles warmly at her. The shopkeeper arrives at Teresa's apartment block. He descends stone steps and waits outside her door. She sits on a chair inside. The shopkeeper checks his watch and continues to wait, holding the food carrier in the red plastic bag by his side. Eventually, Teresa gets up and opens her door. She holds her head up to the security gate.
Smells good. What did your father cook today?
Teresa opens the security gate and reaches out for the bag. She touches the shopkeeper's hand and recoils back a bit. She then takes his hand in hers.
Who are you?
She reaches out and touches his face with her hands. She holds her face close to his.
Are you his father?
He takes her hand in his and taps twice with his palm.
Yes.
Come in.
She leads him inside. Framed photographs hang on Teresa's walls. One shows a younger Teresa playing with a little boy who seems totally captivated. One sepia-toned photograph is a formal shot of Teresa in her 20s, wearing an elegant Chinese-style outfit. The shopkeeper looks at the photos and then turns and watches Teresa effortlessly taking crockery from a kitchen cupboard. The shopkeeper sets his plastic bag on the table and takes out a flask and the food carrier. Teresa puts spoons into two mugs as he begins to lay out the food dishes. Teresa takes a sugar bowl off a shelf and places it down beside the mugs. The shopkeeper glances down at a dish of braised beef in a dark brown sauce. A stark hospital corridor. A row of ceiling fans spin around in perfect synchronization. The shopkeeper is at his wife's bedside, deep worry lines etched across his face as he stares down at her. His wife's eyes narrow, and she grimaces as if in pain. She suddenly takes hold of his hand and brings it up to her face. He watches, bewildered, as she places the palm of his hand over her mouth. She looks up at him through tired, insistent eyes. He looks back at her sadly. The shopkeeper ponders for a moment, then leans down and kisses her forehead, all the while keeping his hand over her mouth. Later, in the corridor, the shopkeeper leans against a railing and the white-tiled wall, bent over with grief. At Teresa's, the shopkeeper sits stooped on a chair, rocking gently, tears rolling down his cheeks. Teresa sets the mugs down on the table and goes to him. She delicately touches his face with her hands and bends down towards him. Teresa wraps her arms around the distraught shopkeeper and gently rubs his back. With his head nestled on her chest, she rests her head on his and holds him in a long, warm embrace. The screen fades to black. A blank piece of paper sits in the platen of a cream-coloured manual typewriter. Its ink ribbon jumps up and down as the metal type bars bounce forwards and print faded black letters onto the page.
Be with me, my beloved love.
The carriage is slid back to the beginning and a new line is started.
That my smile may not fade.
ITFC audio description was written by Jennifer Hill and Fiona McGune. This film is dedicated to Tek Puat and Rosemary Koo, Wong Sam Mui. Meant to be: Teresa Chan, Chu Sung Ching, father; Lawrence Yong, son; Leong Kui Eng, mother; Elizabeth Choi. Finding Love: Seet Kang Yu, security guard; Lin Po, Anne; Eng Sui Ah, father; Lin Po Huet, brother; San Wayne Bin Reyes, security supervisor; To Cheng On, neighbor; Maximilian Wong, neighbor's son. So in Love: Izan Lee, Jackie; Samantha Tan, Sam; Jason Tan, Brian; Lim Poe Huang, Jackie's mother; John Cheong, Sam's father; Sherry Lim, Sam's mother; Sean Ko, Sam's brother. With special thanks to Pierre Roussillon for his guidance and support. Sponsors: Club 21, J Salon, Yo Hiap Seng Limited, Go Joo Hin PTE Limited, Goodwood Park Hotel, Asia Pacific Breweries S PTE Limited. Special thanks: Singapore Film Commission, StarHub Limited, SBS Transit Limited, Saviour PTE Limited, Panasonic Singapore, Infinite Frameworks PTE Limited, Shine Models and Talent Agency. Far East Organisation Centre PTE Limited, YMCA of Singapore, Thumper PTE Limited, Kwong Wai Shiu Hospital and Nursing Home, Cock and Ball Rotisserie and Grill, Church of Saints Peter and Paul, NTUC Fair Price, Dawson Place, Tanjong Pajar, Guan Hin Provision Shop, The Straits Times, Shaw Organisation, The Falcon's Hangar PTE Limited, Sonic Disc PTE Limited, Simply Toys, Pretty in Tokyo PTE Limited, Ooh Baby, Shaw Department Store, Guan Kim Restaurant, Singapore School for the Visually Handicapped, Capital and Commercial Management PTE Limited, Stores of Chinatown Complex, Estivo Gelateria, Wheelock Place. This feature film was shot on Panasonic Vericam DVC Pro HD. All characters and events depicted in this film are fictitious, and any similarity to actual persons living or dead, or to actual events, is entirely coincidental, save for certain events relating to Teresa Chan Polin's life, which are based on interviews with her and her yet as unpublished autobiography. Copyright 2005, 27 Productions, PTE Limited.